You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
Packers Talk.
After an ugly last-second win over the Detroit Lions last season, I went with "You Never Feel Bad About a W" as the title of that following week's show. Sunday against Jacksonville, the Green Bay Packers were determined to test the limits of that statement. And with that, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Lemps Talkin' Pack. I'm your host, Chris Lempsis, coming to you once again from my basement Packer room in my home in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here to break down Green Bay's emotionless, dreary, downright freaking lackluster 24-20 win over the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday at a once again empty Lambeau Field. Hey, you want to get fans back in Lambeau? Mask up, Wisconsin. Social distance, Wisconsin. Come on, Wisconsin. Let's go. Let's do this. Let's band together. Let's do these things so we can be back at Lambeau cheering on the Pack. Come on. You know, I had to think of new words for flat and lifeless because I used so many of them after the loss of the Vikings just 2 weeks back. Didn't think I'd be doing it so soon. Didn't think I'd be sitting here 2 weeks later, literally trying to find synonyms in my head, think of synonyms in my head for flat and lifeless. Yeah, but here we be. At least they won, I guess. With the win, and yes, it was a win. I double-checked, I triple-checked to make sure. The Packers remain in first in the NFC North at 7-2. They are now two full games ahead of the 5-4 Chicago Bears, who will host the 3-5 Minnesota Vikings on Monday Night Football. And the 4-5 Detroit Lions, for at least a day, are in third and only a game back of the Bears for second place after their last-second home win over the Washington football team on Sunday. Packers are also, if you care about such things, as of now, the number one seed in the NFC, holding the head-to-head tiebreaker over the 7-2 Saints. You know, it's always funny to me when the Bears and Vikings play, because, like, it's just like I could care less about that game. Because either way I win and either way I lose, right? I mean, either way we win, we lose as Packer fans. Bears won, hey, Vikings lost. That's good, we'll laugh about that, but then the Bears won. There's no good outcome in that game. I guess maybe a tie or a meteor, maybe. Before we get into the fun, I have to do the shameless self-promotion, which I know you love or at the very least tolerate. Twitter, LempsMKE at It's Just Chris Now. I thought about doing like a Limp Bizkit theme day. That was gonna be my theme for the game day tweets, because they're from Jacksonville. But I got like two or three tweets into it and I just abandoned it. It's like, this'll be fun. And then I got like a couple tweets and I was like, you know what? I don't want to do this. Forget it. No, that's too much. Nobody needs that, you know? Facebook, Old Bag of Donuts, OL Bag of Donuts. The email, Old Bag of Donuts, OL Bag of Donuts at gmail.com. For anyone listening on the wonderful Packers Talk iTunes page, leave a rating, 5 stars, 4 stars. Those would be great. Hey, thumbs up. Maybe a comment. That'd be cool if it's positive. And we're on Spotify, which I'm just going to keep saying because it's still cool to me. Search for Packers Talk and look for our logo, which is the head of the Vince Lombardi statue, which sits outside Lambeau Field. All right, let's go. Let's dive right in. Let's talk about this Packers win, which was, again, a win and not a loss. Just to clarify, just so you're totally sure, I can confirm they did win. They did not lose. You might think they did. I can't blame you. But they won. And honestly, that feels like as good a place as any to start the overall sloppy nature of the game. Why am I even trying? The Packers didn't try today. Why am I even trying for this show? The whole show should just be me going, hey, let's talk about the offense. And then I'm going to talk about the defense. Oh, you want to talk about special teams? That could just be the whole show, just me throwing out different parts of the team making fart noises. That's about as much effort as they put up today. That last one was kind of, that sounded like almost like a Najee Davenport. That wasn't like a fart that crossed over into Najee territory. All right, derailed. And don't worry, yes, I am going to get to the David Bakhtiari contract extension news later on in the show. It's coming, stick around. Okay, first off, I will say I'm not 150% surprised by what we saw Sunday. If you follow me on Twitter, you know on Tuesday night, I put out a tweet saying I was a little more than a little nervous about Sunday because of the high line. The Packers were at that point, I don't know what it closed at, but I know that as of Tuesday night, they were 13.5-point favorites over Jacksonville, which was the highest line of the week. And anytime the Packers are the highest line of the week on the positive end, I'm always really nervous. It just makes me so freaking terrified. So that alone scared me. But I mean, there were other factors, you know? Look, the weather was shit. It was a terrible day at Lambeau weather-wise, right? I think it was raining at one point. It was windy, cold. It just, the weather sucked. Bad opponent. Jacksonville only had one win coming in today. I guess they still do, right? It was a longer than usual layoff after last week's game. They basically had like a mini bye. It was 10 days. Yeah, 10 days since they played last. I tweeted on Saturday night. It felt like it was about 2 years since they'd played last. So I could only imagine how the players felt. And then, you know, stuff like the banged up secondary, not having Kevin King again, not having Jair this week, as he's still recovering from his concussion suffered against San Francisco. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you add all that up. It was there for Tropical Storm Don't Give a Fuck to reach landfall in Green Bay. And boy, oh boy, did it reach landfall. It hit hard as an MFer, I'll tell you what. That's like the one swear I won't say on the show for some reason. I don't think I've ever said it. I'm sure something will happen at some point and I will, but I haven't said it yet. That'll be a momentous day when I do. I'll make it count, don't worry. Yeah, I mean, the Packers, just 2 weeks after losing at Lambeau to the Vikings, largely, now not entirely, but largely due to an unfocused effort, came out and gave not the same level of effort, but get this, even less of an effort. That's right. They seemed to play, the effort was even more lacking than it was against the Vikings Sunday against Jacksonville. I mean, literally at one point, I said to my wife, it felt like they were trying to see how much I could fuck around and still win. Like, I was like, is this like a contest? Or are they like, hey, you think we could still win if we do this? Hey, you think we could still win if we do that? I don't know. Let's see. Fuck, try it. Let's you know, throw it out there. Let's see what happens. Roll the dice, baby. I mean, I should do the Stefan voice. This game had it all. Turnovers, poor special teams play, poor tackling, penalties, piss poor coaching. You name it, it happened. And somehow the Packers still won. I still can't believe it that they somehow won. How did they win? You know, this is a trend that simply cannot continue. Some years back, I went to go see the Lombardi play when it was here in Milwaukee. I think it was at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. And at the beginning of the play, the actor playing Vince Lombardi comes out and gives a speech about, you know, well, we won today. My team won today. But they didn't give maximum effort. And I'm concerned about, there was something to this effect. If you've seen the play, you know. And he's saying, you know, and that concerns me because once a team starts thinking that they can win without giving their all, that, you know, that's a dangerous trend that sets in for your club. And that is really kind of, it feels like it's starting to happen here with this Packers team. You know, 2 out of the last 3 games, 3 of 5. Post by, if you count the Tampa game, which, I mean, I guess they actually started that game out okay. Tampa just beat the intensity out of them with a stick as the game progressed. But just there's a feeling of, like, malaise with this team setting in. You know what I mean? They need to wake up, and they need to wake up fast. So let's start as far as actual units on team. Let's start with the offense. My God, where do I even start? Let's start with the game. Let's talk about the game planning, play calling, whatever the hell you want to call it, whatever you want to say. It was weird and not good. Not good at all. I want to give the Jacksonville Jaguars defense credit. Hell, their whole team credit. They came into Lambeau to battle. I think the Packers thought they were just going to roll over, and they didn't, man. They were there to win. They were in it to win it. But still, this is one of the worst run defenses in the league. Worse than the Packers, Chris? Oh, hell yeah, much worse. And there's Aaron Jones, star running back Aaron Jones, only getting 5 carries in the first half. Now, I know you're going to be like, well, we only had 6 yards on those carries. But still, why is Jamal Williams getting 7 carries and Jones only 5 in the first 2 quarters? That's bad math. Bad math right there. Hell, Jones only had 9 touches total through, like, about the first 2.5 quarters. That's just simply not enough. Though I know they did make more of an effort towards the end as he ended up finishing with, what, 13 carries for 46 yards on the ground. And 5 catches for 49 yards. So what, 95 yards on 18 touches? That's not bad. But still, you know, and I said this last year. If you listened to the show last year, which I hope you did, this offense should never stray too far from Aaron Jones. Never more than a few plays at a time should he go without touching the ball. Yes, he's that good. Yes, he is that special. Speaking of running backs, before I want to mention, rest in peace, Paul Hornung. Right? NFL Hall of Famer, pro football legend, Paul Hornung. Green Bay Packer, great on those great 60s Lombardi teams. Passed away on Friday at the age of 84. I want to mention that now just real quick. It's really sad that the Lombardi-era Packers are all leaving us. Herb Adderley passed away not too long ago, and now Paul Hornung, obviously, Willie Davis is gone. Well, Nitschke died a long time ago, but yeah, Bart Starr passed recently. Like, just, it's sad that they're all leaving us. You know, for anybody who was lucky enough to actually watch those teams, or in my case, have a parent, my father watched those teams and would love to regale me with stories of, those great Lombardi Packers teams and great moments and stuff. It's sad. That's really sad. I'm still sad about it, Just, again, rest in peace, Paul Hornung. Back to the game. It wasn't just the Jones stuff, though. The short passes. What was with all the short passes to Devontae Adams in the first half? All the dink and dunk stuff. The little 2-yard passes and 3-yard passes. No effort to get him downfield. Why? I get trying it once or twice, but they kept, humping that football and nothing was working. I didn't like that either, And then in the second half, when they did get him the ball downfield, he fumbled. Packers' first possession in the second half. Rodgers hits Adams for a nice gain. The ball's punched out by C.J. Henderson. C.J. Henderson, the really impressive-looking rookie first-rounder from Florida for Jacksonville, the corner. Jaguars recover, return it deep into Green Bay territory. Jags end up scoring on that ensuing drive. Tie game up 17. Poor ball security from Adams on that play, too. That was a really nice play from Henderson. Give him his credit. But really, I thought that was really kind of piss-poor ball security from Devontae on that one. Just very uncharacteristic for him, And then speaking of uncharacteristic plays in that third quarter, Aaron Rodgers. Wow. Wow, A-Rod, what a terrible interception that was from you. 3rd and 8 at the Jacksonville 47. Score still tied. Rodgers underthrows MVS and is picked. I mean, at that point, that was so underthrown, terribly under. It was such a meek pass. At that point, I was like, Jesus, everything that can go wrong has go wrong. That's how it felt at that moment. It speaks to the brilliance of his career that I can only remember a handful of throws like that from 12 ever, but that was one of them. That was not good. How rare is it? This is from Rob Domofsky, Packers beat reporter for ESPN.com. That was Aaron Rodgers' first interception at home since week 6 of last season. He had gone 7 straight games and 263 straight pass attempts at Lambeau without an interception. So there you go. Jacksonville ends up getting a field goal on the ensuing possession early in the 4th now, and the Packers were now behind 20-17. And for the first time all day, it really felt like, holy shit balls, they might lose this game. It didn't seem possible until that moment. Even as poorly as they had played and as lifeless as they looked, it was like, well, they're going to win. When Jacksonville went up, I was like, oh my, I literally out loud just blurted, oh my God, they might lose. So yeah, the fumble by Devontae and the interception from Rodgers. 2 plays, that cost the Packers 10 points. Of course, the Hogs up front helped about 0.0% too, didn't they? Wasn't that Blutarski's grade point average, 0.0? That's about as much as the offensive line helped. Really poor effort from them in this one. They were just consistently getting their asses whipped up front, both in pass pro and run blocking. Just couldn't move anyone. I have to say pass pro. One thing I've learned, if you say pass protection, you don't sound as hip. If you say pass pro, it sounds like you know what you're talking about. So I try to sound like, that's like cool hip lingo. I go pass pro. And that group has been pretty good this season, despite the musical chairs lineup. But against Jacksonville Sunday, they just stunk. They just sucked. There's no other way to say it. Now, to be fair, that group did pull it together for the drive that led to the game-winning score. Really some nice work on that. That pitch to Jones, the blocking on that was excellent from the right side of the line. He got it near the red zone. I thought there was some nice blocking on the short pass to MVS. More on him later. He got it inside the 10. And then Rodgers with a ton of time on the play action. Really nice play action fake. Again, from Rodgers. He's been really good on the play action fakes this year. He usually is, but it seems like he's been especially better this year. Slings one to Devontae, who leaps up to get it. Nice scrap. He skied up to get that one. Holy shit. I was like, damn, dude. I knew he could jump, but that was like really impressive. Nice grab from Devontae. Touchdown Packers. 24-20 Green Bay with 9:03 to go in the game. Yeah, great work from the O-line on that drive, right? Pass pro, again, I got to sound cool saying it that way. And the run blocking. And it was nice to see Adams atone for his early mistake, too. Or from his previous mistake in the third quarter. But yeah, you know, just overall not great, considering how, you know, shitty Jacksonville's defense appeared to be coming into the game. Not great at all. You know? And speaking of doing just barely enough, C's and D's get degrees. Hi, defense. Hi, Packers defense. How are ya? Okay, so I'll start with the positive. I'm going to rip them, but I do want to start with the positive here. They dialed it up when they absolutely had to on Jacksonville's final set of downs. They did. Nice work from Kenny to recognize the screen. Kenny Clark. I should just say, can you know what I mean? Nice work from Kenny Clark to recognize the screen on his first down and pull back, forcing the incomplete. That was awesome. That was awesome awareness. Holy shit. The way he saw it, whoop, and pulled back, didn't get sucked in. Oh, brilliant. That's the guy they gave all the money to. He's been, you know, and I don't dog Kenny too much because he's been getting, he gets double teamed all the time because the rest of this D-line isn't very good. You know, it becomes harder. You know, when you get that contract, you get the big, you get a big bullseye on your back from every opposing offensive coordinator and offensive line coach. But, you know, I thought that was a great play from Kenny. Hopefully he can, you know, start to build on that. And then Rashawn Gary dials it up for the sack on second down. Really nice burst off the edge from him. He had a really great start to the season, and then it just kind of, he got injured, and it kind of didn't look great. And then today I thought he looked pretty good. Nice burst from him on that. Then third and 16, Preston Smith, Gary get to, what the hell is it, Jake Luton? This is the only time I'm ever going to need to know his name. Jake Luton. I wanted it to be Minshew. You know that? I was hoping he'd be healthy. He doesn't show, you know, I love the white trash thing he's got going on. I think it's hysterical. But he's injured. So it was Jake Luton. They tripped him up. And he just couldn't stand on his feet. It was funny watching him. Hey, he's like, I got it. I'm going to stand on my feet. It's always funny when a quarterback's like, I'm going to stand on my feet. Oh, I'm going down. So he was down for the sack, and then it's 4th and 26. Oh, my God. Speaking of a game that had it all, this fucking game had a 4th and 26. How hard did you shit yourself when you saw that? It was funny being on Twitter. Everybody at once was like, 4th and 26. Oh, no. Oh, no. Is Freddie Mitchell going to run out onto the field for Jacksonville? Someone tell Nick Barnett to line up in the right spot. Don't jump the wrong route. Anyways, yeah, so 4th and 26, great pressure, especially from Z on that, forced Luton further and further back. Luton harmlessly flips one, turnover on downs, game over. But so that was about it, though. Yeah, that's about where the positives start and end. The defense got blown off the line all day, couldn't tackle for shit. That running back for Jacksonville, what is his name? James Robinson, really impressive looking rookie back. They got something there with that kid. But yeah, couldn't tackle for shit, particularly Robinson. Refused to go to aggressive man coverage until late. I don't know why they waited so long to do that. Once they did that, it felt like they really kind of snuffed Jacksonville out. But yeah. And frankly, you know what? They got lucky more than once. Via either penalties committed by Jacksonville or when Jacksonville just couldn't quite complete. They had multiple passes for what would have been big gains. Just were just a little, you know, a tick off here. You know, the pass was just a tick off. Receiver couldn't quite hang on. They got lucky, definitely. And this group, I mean, man, they just continue to play with almost little to no fire for far too many stretches. You know, that sequence at the end that I highlighted a couple minutes ago. Shit, man, if you're capable of that, then why do you play so lifeless the rest of the game? What's going on here? You know, I mean, stuff like, you know, when Z got his sack, what was his 8th of the year? He got the sack. And he was trying to do the celebration, I think, kind of celebrating. He had a child recently, I believe a son. Congratulations to Z for that. And I think someone was supposed to come over and, like, bring him the baby and, like, pantomime bringing him a baby, and he was going to rock it. And he got down, like, you know, sitting cross-legged, and no one came over, and he kind of turned around like, what the fuck, guys? You know? So even that, it's like they can't even get a sack celebration right. Just felt, it's just no juice. No life. You know, I'll give Z credit. It felt like at multiple points he was trying to rally the troops today. I felt like I sensed that from Kenny Clark a little bit, too. I think they were trying. It just doesn't seem to take. I don't know what's going on. You know? I'll tell you what I do know, though. There aren't too many more Jake Lutons on the schedule. So this shit has to get in gear and get in gear fast. They got to get their shit in a pile, as an old friend of mine used to say. You know, maybe Pettin can show his guys film of Jacksonville so they can see what a defense that actually gives a rat's ass looks like. That might help. And then the special teams. Oh, the special teams. Jesus. God, that was just the cherry on the top of the shit Sunday on Sunday. That punt return touchdown from Cole. What a freaking disaster that was. J.K. Scott getting juked out at the end is going to be on every highlight reel for the next week. Oh my God, maybe the next 2 weeks, maybe the rest of time. So everybody blamed J.K. Scott, and I did too. You know, as the punt was sailing further and further downfield, like I said, I go, oh, I hope he didn't outkick his coverage, which at least on the surface seems like that's the case. Sorry, I was talking into my cup. I'm using my Get Loud Lambo cup. Sorry about that. But then I saw this tweet from, everybody knows who Pat McAfee is, right? Former NFL punter, host of the highly successful Pat McAfee show that Aaron Rodgers appears on once a week. So this was an interesting tweet from McAfee during the game. He put in quotation marks, "He outkicked his coverage is such a lazy way to blame the punter and not explain the coverage team's responsibilities. Now, should J.K. Scott have hit it that low and far? No. But see also," and then he has a screenshot of five Packers guys in the same lane, and he puts in all caps, "five guys covering the same exact lane." Then he says, "they should look like a net," and then in quotation marks puts, "lane integrity." So, yeah, I mean, and when you see the photo and you see how he's got it circled, if you check it out, if you are on Twitter, check out McAfee if you don't follow him already. It's pretty damning to see that. You just kind of hang your head and go like, Jesus, the special teams is bad. How are they still so bad? But then even if we absolve Scott for that, you can't absolve his 30-yard punt that put Jacksonville near midfield to start what would be its final possession of the game. Oh my God. What a dead duck that punt was. Jesus, man. You know, that was where they needed Scott to boom one. And he couldn't. He couldn't do it. I love that he struggles, and meanwhile Jacksonville's like wizard sorcerer punters, like getting all these incredible bounces where the ball just like dies at the 2 yard line. He had the one that it was in the second half that ended up being a touchback, but it bounced and it looked like it was gonna like hook, take this really wide angle, hook and just go out of bounds at like the one before it did go through the end zone. But I was like, did you make a deal with the devil? How are you able to punt this ball? Do teams have punters who can do this? Because the Packers don't. I mean, Scott had some nice, you know, he had the one nice punt that was, I think, like went inside the five, about the 5 yard line. He had the one, but he, you know, this is probably the most I've ever talked about punters on this show. It's just, I don't know about Scott, you know, for a guy who was taken, what, the 5th round? Still too up and down. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they go in a new direction this offseason. I'll say that. All right. So, yeah, tough day for special teams coordinator Sean Menenga's guys. I have not been impressed at all with his work in Green Bay. This is his second year here. Tell you what, he may not be long for Titletown if this shit keeps up. So, you know, those are the negative. I don't want to say it was all negative, though. I do want to talk about a couple positives. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, MVS as we call him here on the show. If you're wondering, yes, after his last two performances against San Francisco and today, the board of MVS Industries, I was informed, is holding emergency meetings as we speak to discuss the potential of restarting MVS Industries. It may happen. It may not. I'll let you know when I find out. But you know what? He was good today. He was really good. 4 catches, 149 yards, and a score, including obviously the 78-yard touchdown catch from Rodgers. I love, didn't you love that he like Matt? If you play Madden, you totally know what MVS was doing on that. The way he caught the ball and just kind of kept diagonally running across the field. That's like the old Madden move. I don't know if it still is. Back in my day when we played Madden, because I don't really play anymore. But that was the old move. If you were trying to make sure you got away from the defense, you just kept running at a diagonal down the field, crossing the field diagonally. It was harder for the defensive players to keep to get to you. I love that he did that. I was like, he's doing the Madden move. He's doing the Madden move. So that cracked me up. NFL Eric Bledsoe, great day for MVS. I have no complaints about his play over the last 2 weeks. He's been really good. Really well, no, because he dropped the one against San Francisco. So it hasn't been flawless. Today it was pretty close to flawless, though. You know, and they're bad opponents the last 2 weeks, right? San Francisco's not very good, and obviously Jacksonville isn't. But maybe, just maybe, The light is coming on for MVS? Maybe? I hope? See, but then I said, like, you know, the MVS experience couldn't be a roller coaster because it would lead to mass casualties. Like the Eric Bledsoe experience. So I don't know. I think that now, and then he might drop 10 balls next week. Or he might catch one and throw it over his head into the stands. I have no idea what he's going to do. So, and it was nice to see Adrian Amos get a pick. You know, he's been close lately. I think I said in the show at some point in the last couple weeks that he needed to kind of cash in on one of them. And he did. Now, it was a ball that was thrown right to him when Tyler Eifert slipped on the turf. But still, he caught it. And it's nice to see him reward because, again, he has been close. Okay, so 25 minutes in. Normally, here I would do the big picture. But I feel like I sort of did that in the beginning, right? After the shameless self-promotion. I mean, this level of play has to stop. They have to start as a team giving more consistent effort. Playing with more energy. Energy and effort. Copyright Jason Kidd. The schedule is about to get harder. Much, much harder. I get that this is the third quarter of the season and maybe some, you know, fatigue sets in. That series of games, the third quarter, you know, between the midway point and the stretch drive is sort of, in my opinion, the NFL dog days. But still, enough. The Packers are in the circle of, about 10 or so teams, I think, that can get to and win the Super Bowl this year. But again, they, like I said earlier, they've also played 3 of 5 post-bye week games with very little effort and intensity. At least two, even if you say, again, they started the Tampa game well before things fell to shit. 2 out of 5 games, and 2 of the last 3, both at home playing very lifeless. That is not good. That is bad. That has to stop. You know? Because at some point, it's, you know, it's not just a hiccup, but it's a trend. And then at some point, it's not even a trend. It's just who you are. And I really hope that doesn't happen because I think there's potential here for this team to be pretty damn good and be special. But they have to start giving a shit first, and they haven't for a little while now. So that, I'm going to do like an abbreviated big picture because I do want to use what would normally be that portion of the show. I want to talk about left tackle David Bakhtiari's contract extension. How about that? Literally announced, was it during the third quarter or fourth quarter? People were like, was he negotiating at halftime? Did he sign it in the locker room? But yeah, I'll read the terms here. I believe it was first reported by Pro Football Talk. Who, screw them, because they have blocked me on Twitter. That's right. Mike Florio blocked me on Twitter. And you know what the sad thing is? I don't even know what I said. I said so much. I talked so much shit to Florio on Twitter back in the old days. It could have been any number of 2 or 3 dozen tweets. I just wish I knew, you know what I mean? Because I'm proud to be blocked by him, because he's a Vikings fan. Screw him. But, and he sucks anyways. But I just wish I knew what it was, you know what I mean? It's like, can you at least give me that honor of telling me what got me blocked? I'd appreciate it. So anyways, yeah, they first reported the terms, but then this is from, where am I here? Here we go. From Ian Rappaport at Rapsheet. Y'all know him, NFL Network. The Packers and left tackle David Bakhtiari agreed on a 4-year extension worth up to $105.5 million in new money, source said. I can only imagine who the source could be. Could it be his agent? That would be my guess. He is now the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history. At its base, it's $23 million per year and could reach $23.5 million per year. Then later on, he tweets, Bakhtiari got a $30 million signing bonus, the largest ever for an offensive lineman, and he has another $30 million-plus available in March roster bonuses within the next 28 months. Just a massive deal. The practical guarantee is at least $62.8 million before the end of the 2022 season. And this is me now. How much do you want to bet Bakhtiari wanted it to be $69 million? He seems like that kind of guy, which is why I love him. So yeah, I'll say this. You know, if you listen to the show I did over the summer, Think About the Future, where I talked about projections and what I thought the Packers and pending free agents might get, I believe I had Bakhtiari at about $19 million per. I think I said 3 for 57 or 4 for 75 or 76. Obviously, I was way off on that, and I was way off on the guaranteed money too. I mean, this just blew all those projections out of the water. And you know what though? I think the Packers at least had my number in mind, because if you remember, Rob Domofsky, again from ESPN.com, tweeted recently. I think he tweeted right before the season, and then at some point within like the last 6 weeks, he said the Packers and Bakhtiari were about $4 million off. that Bakhtiari was looking for about $23 million per, 22, 23 in the Packers. It was 22, I think, and the Packers were offering about 18. So I was right, at least as far as what they were offering. The surprising thing to me is how much it changed. Because it felt, he said that a couple times on Twitter, and it felt like the Packers were standing pretty firm on their offer. And all of a sudden, not only did they meet the $22 million per, they exceeded it. They went to $23 million per. I don't know what changed, but I think a big part of it, why they did the deal now, because I did see some people wondering about that on Twitter. I think because it's still, we haven't gotten to December yet, the Packers can take one-fifth of that $30 million signing bonus. Like, if they had signed him after the season, that $30 million signing bonus gets prorated. If you did Madden franchise mode, you know what I'm talking about. You spread it out over 4 years. So it would have been 7.5, 7.5, 7.5, 7.5, which factors in if you're going to think about releasing him or restructuring him down the road. But because they did it now, it becomes six. They can tack on a fifth of it this year. Instead of splitting it into four, it's split up five times. So it's an extra six. So it's $6 million will go on their cap this year, I believe. And then $6 million next year, 2022, 2023, and 2024. So it'll save the Packers on the cap about $1.5 million a year to sign Bakhtiari at this point. And it's just, I think, good to get it done. You wanted him to know he was a priority. So what does it mean for the future? We'll see. GM Brian Gutekunst, now he talked to the press after the game today. He seems to think it'll give them more flexibility, which is interesting to me. But, you know, I think there will be some things that they'll do. I think they're gonna probably have to extend Devontae this offseason too, and that could open up some cap. Actually could open up cap, as crazy as that may sound. So, and just getting Bakhtiari locked up, I mean, it makes sense. Think of it this way. He can act as a bridge of sorts from the Aaron Rodgers era to what we presume in 2022, we assume will be the start of the Jordan Love era. Sort of similar in the way that, similar to how Chad Clifton was that bridge from the Favre era to the beginning of the Aaron Rodgers era. Remember, Cliffy was in Green Bay through Rodgers' first 4 years? Yeah, it was after 2011 that he retired. So he was there the first 4 years, so he was kind of the bridge from, and it's good, you know, that gave Rodgers some real security starting his career, knowing that he had that rock at left tackle. And I think the Packers are thinking that Bakhtiari will be that for Jordan Love. So it makes sense, especially if you look at it that way. Now, I'd say more on that, but I do believe some of you asked questions via Twitter about it. So let's get to those and all other questions, comments received from you guys and gals about this game right now. Okay. I want the iced tea hit me gif. I always do a hit me gif when I go, hey, send any comments or questions. I didn't realize there was an iced tea one. Should I would have posted that way earlier. Okay, first question is from, these are in no particular order, from Justin Cornwell, at Justin A. Cornwell, friend of the show. All the fluke play ingredients necessary for an upset ended up happening, and the Packers still made enough plays of their own to win. That keeps me from being more upset with the performance, although the O-line and play calling were really subpar most of the game. Yeah, Justin, I totally agree. I mean, I talked about that earlier in the show, you know. The offensive line was not great. You know, finding out about Bakhtiari that he signed the contract right before midnight, I'm like, did he just start drinking after he signed the contract? You know, I'm just kidding. But I mean, it was not. And did they all celebrate with him? Was it just like an offensive line keg party that started at midnight? Bakhtiari's like, keg's on me, boys. I don't know. But yeah, it was. They were not good. And the play calling was, it was subpar. It was really bad. Matt LaFleur has seen better days, that's for sure. So I agree. For my old pal, Brew Crewer, usually I save Adam for the end here, but Brew Crewer at @asummers_time, my old bag of donuts podcast co-host. Adam didn't even send a question. Burp, got to keep it real. He sent a GIF of Ozzen. If you watch the show 90 Day Fiancé on TLC, which my wife does, Ozzen is saying simply, it gives me a weird feeling. And you know what? Me too. Yeah, it feels weird. It was like, I was like, well, they won, I guess, which is better than losing. I don't know. It kind of felt like after the tie against the Vikings, was it 2 years ago at Lambeau? Where it was just like, well, that was a thing I watched. Definitely had that vibe. So I agree with you there, buddy. This is from Wesley Wyndham Price at Price Wyndham, who asks, love that Bakhtiari got paid, but is this the nail in the coffin for an Aaron Jones deal? I might be okay with that given his availability recently. I think that that could be the case, yes. It kind of depends on how much they're able to create through other avenues. Like I said, like, if they extend Devontae, that might open up some cap for next year. Thinking about certain players who may or may not be released, like a Christian Kirksey or a Rick Wagner. Would they release Preston Smith? I mean, he was better today, but we all know it has not gone great for Preston in year two. So it depends on how much cap that they can create and what the cap even looks like, you know, during this COVID year. So I wouldn't say it's the nail in the coffin, but I would say, I wouldn't say it's the final nail, but I would say it's a nail in the coffin, yes. So I'm like kind of half-assed answering your question. I'd say you're half right. It's another nail, but it's not, the casket isn't closed yet. It's getting there. And then you wonder about Kevin King, too. Kevin King, this is the Packers' ninth game of the season today. He's now missed. He's missed every game post-bye, right? Tampa, Houston, Minnesota, San Francisco, five. He missed, what, basically half the Atlanta game. So he's missed 5.5 out of 9 games this year. That's not great. The Kevin King thing, I don't envy Gutekunst at all on that one, which I've said multiple times. This is Kevin King's fourth year in the NFL. This is starting to look like another injury-plagued season for him. I mean, he's already, even if he plays every game the rest of the way, he'll still have missed a third of the games this year. So it's getting close to being another injury-plagued year, getting that title thrown on there. So 4 years in the league, and three of them he's been beat up. You know, what do you pay a guy like that? Do you pay a guy like that? I don't know. Because when he played last year, he looked pretty good, real good. You know, he's not a number one corner, but he's a damn fine number two corner. Hell yeah, he and Jair would be, you know, are and will continue to be one of the top corner pairings in the league. Speaking of highest paid players at a position in NFL history, I think Jair may end up being the highest paid corner in NFL history when his contract. We're a couple, 2-3 years away from that, but when that happens, I wouldn't be surprised. What do you pay Kevin King? You know, I don't know. Do you want to let him go? What if it turns into Casey Hayward part two? You know? A friend of mine pointed out after the game to me that, you know, Gutekunst learned under Ted. Ted was pretty steadfast on not paying corners. Didn't pay Devon House. Didn't pay Tremont Williams. Didn't pay Hayward. They paid Sam Shields. I saw how well that worked out. But, you know, didn't pay Micah Hyde. Didn't even make Micah Hyde an offer. Now, he was a safe, you know, more of a DB safety. But you know what I mean. So, I don't know what they're going to do with Kevin King. But which one of those two do you focus on? Do you focus on either one? It's a lot of work. That's why I think it was good to get Bakhtiari done now. Because now the organization has time to kind of really decide what they want to do with these two going forward, if anything at all. And then this one is from Balerion at Balerio 150-20486. Still has not taken my advice to shorten the numbers at the end of their name. Not that this is a good reason to make this move, but couldn't letting Pettine go now light a much-needed fire under this lifeless D? Yeah. It could. I think it would. The fact that the guys keep these lifeless efforts are piling up, you know, it's becoming a real damning trend, especially from the defense. That eventually that falls on the coordinator, you know? It falls on the coordinator at a certain point. And I think we're there now. And I just get the sense LaFleur is getting near fed up with Pettine. Yeah. I definitely get that sense. I think it could. Would I do it? Hell, I would have done it 2 weeks ago after the Minnesota game. But I don't know if they're going to. I mean, at a certain point, you have to just keep them through the rest of the year. But I think if they were to do it in the next couple weeks, yeah. I think that could really help out. Definitely. Okay, and then I do have an email question I want to get to. Oh my God, I almost said 40 minutes. Well, this damn Bakhtiari thing, you know, just popped up. All right, I have an email from Kyle Turpenning, who still refuses to get Twitter. Good for you, Kyle. I feel like we didn't deserve the win. Offense was weak all day outside of a few good plays. Sloppy all day. Defense, I don't know. Yeah, they weren't responsible for some of the points, but I feel like they're a ball and chain on the team's ankles. Pettine continues to not rush the passer as much as he should. That would have been helpful with both King and Alexander out. But I do have to give props to MVS, got the ball when we needed it most. Yeah, I don't find fault with anything you said there, Kyle. I agree. I do think, let's focus on here, Pettine. Yeah, he doesn't rush the passer as much as he should. It still drives me nuts. You know? He still refuses to get really aggressive with this defense. That's something I think that could light a fire under this defense. Start blitzing more. You know? Maybe you start really putting pressure on a quarterback and that starts getting the guys hooting and hollering and everybody starts getting fired up. I still don't think they're aggressive enough. They should be the corner should be pressing. Blitz. You know, I think they play so passively. I feel like so much of the, you know, the light boxes and dropping back in coverage. I feel like that's starting to, like, it's like an infected mindset. You know what I mean? I think that's probably why the fire is just not there anymore for this defense. Get aggressive. Come on, Mike. Do some try. Send some all-out blitzes. Some thriller blitzes. Right? Come on. So, yeah, I agree with you there, Kyle. I mean, I think it's not aggressive enough. Definitely. So I want to say thanks to everyone who submitted questions. Always appreciated, especially after a fucking clunker like today. Oh, God. You know, it's like I said, I can just imagine if the game got over and people were like, great, they won. Click, log off. So everybody who sent one, thank you. We look ahead now to next Sunday. The Packers will be back in action, traveling to Indianapolis to face the Colts at Lucas Oil Stadium. That game is set for a 3:25 p.m. Lambeau time kickoff. It got flexed to a national spotlight game. Initially, it was a noon start. Colts, that's a good team. I've seen them a bit this year, and I've always come away impressed. They looked really good Thursday night. They kicked the shit out of the rival Tennessee Titans. They looked great, especially in that second half. That's a team, look, they're good in all three phases. Well-coached, they play hard. I'll tell you what, if the Packers give anything close to Sunday's effort against the Colts, they'll get run out, not out of Lucas Oil Stadium, they'll get run out of the state of Indiana. I'm serious, man. They got to step up. And if the Packers really want to start changing some minds, people like me, who, like I said last week, think that they're good but not good enough, maybe that would be an excellent place to start. Go into Lucas Oil Stadium and get a win, and I will feel so much better about their chances the rest of the season than I do right now, I'll tell you that. Of course, I'll be back, win, lose, or draw, to recap that one next Sunday night, Monday morning by the time you hear it. So keep an eye out for that. And until next time, whenever that may be, I am Chris Lampesis. This has been Lamp's Talking Pack. Thank you so very much for listening, Packer Nation. I love you, I love you, I love you. Stay safe out there in this crazy world. And remember, always and forever, go Pack. Go. We'll be right back.